Good evening. You're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM. This is The Clear Spot for Thursday, October 13th, 2013. My name is Leslie Deer, and I'll be with you for the next hour talking about sound and materiality. This is the third show in a series of three hosted by the Modern Language Experiment. These radio shows are a response to this year's Urban Encounters Festival at Tate Britain. The festival is a one-day symposium, and it's in collaboration with Goldsmiths University and Tate Britain. And this year's theme was materiality. Modern Language Experiment commissioned me to create a radio show exploring this theme as an artist who works with sound. When I first began to think about what I wanted to do for this, I thought of the voice and accents, and I thought of sound as object. But then I rediscovered a publication I got earlier this year in February in Berlin at Motto Books. It's called Parole Number 2, Phonetic Skin. And I rediscovered the Brandon LaBelle text, The Sonic Body. So that's where I've taken this. And it's interesting because it's always interesting becoming reacquainted with texts and publications that you collect and go back to and read again. And also, you know, he's talking about movement and dance. And I come from a performing arts background. I started studying dance when I was little, about 7 years old, and got a scholarship to dance in New York. And it was a huge part of my life for a really long time. So I am really excited, actually, to think about dance in terms of sound and in terms of it being a physical render, a manifestation from what we listen to. So I hope you enjoy it, and here we go. Brandon LaBelle, The Sonic Body. The foot taps, the hand hits, the knees bend, all of which signal a beginning, a transformation, the body filled with sound on the verge of movement. I have always been fascinated by dancing, from junior high dances to late night parties, from dance clubs to weddings, these dance events that in their very ordinariness uncover an extraordinary energy to reassemble the coordinates of the body and its place within particular settings. Yet because of this, dancing also brings forward embarrassment, awkwardness, uncertainty. As if to put on display the very undoing of the bodily form is to overstep, literally, certain limits. Yet the dance emerges, opening a space for inertia, collectivity, laughter, and intensity. It transforms not only the gesturing composition of the body, but also the entire spatial field, from the living room to the auditorium to the abandoned building. The thrust and twist, the gyrations and pivots, come to realign the perception and functionality of a particular place. Dancing may do so according to the energetic triangulation of sound, body, and space. It brings these into energetic composition, makes them sweat as a radical assembly that veers towards excess, collapse, transmutation. For myself, dancing also dramatically says something about sound and music. It points the way toward a listening that is all-encompassing. The body in the midst of dance is totally propelled by a sonic infiltration. The music, the sound, the sonicity drives the body into expression. It forces us outward into a fullness always already on the threshold of oblivion, rapture, pain, love. Our body searches for the beat. It follows the rhythm, the sonic texturing of the air. It refigures itself as pure expenditure, delight, and in doing so, I might suggest, the body becomes sonic. It reaches for the other, or the sonic force finds its ultimate residence, to come inside, to resonate within, to break the seams of one's body form, to become uncontrollable or porous, as a loose network that is extraordinarily intimate. A series of recording experiments were made throughout 2009 and 2010, inviting a range of participants, each of whom were given the task of dancing while listening to musical tracks of their choosing through headphones. The idea was to capture, through audio recording, the physical movements of each participant within different settings and to finally eliminate the musical material altogether from the work so as to concentrate on the moving body as a sound event. These movements may be highlighted as giving supplemental expression to the music heard, as sonic traces refiguring the musical work, embodying it through a radical incorporation, a sort of body action that searches for points of contact in the music, following the beat while also beating back. May the body, in the throes of such hyper-articulation of burst seams, expose the energies contained within music and the dynamics of listening as sonic forces that are immediately inside and that also find their way back out through gestures, forms of collective contact, experimental moves. Music as a generative power that ropes the body in while giving it means for reinventing its own formation, for breaking loose with others. So now I'm going to play some examples of LaBelle's recordings that he conducted for this project. So for those of you that aren't familiar with this project or that weren't very clear about what the project is about, he basically conducted a silent rave. So he played music to people in headphones and then recorded the sounds that they made by way of dancing. So I'm going to play some examples now from his project. So it's really interesting. He calls them figures. So for instance, figure one is movement in a concrete room. Listening to Diddly Dee by Susie Hildegard, recorded on a spring afternoon with a single microphone held close to the participant. Figure two is the same participant in the same space, listening to the same music with the addition of a found piece of carpeting placed on the floor. Figure three, movement in a small room, listening to Transmission by Joy Division, recorded late evening. Figure four.
Figure one. Figure 7.
So that was Brandon LaBelle's The Sonic Body, followed by a soundbite of Savion Glover, improvised tap dancing. That was recorded live in the Green Space in collaboration with WNYC and WQXR in New York. I studied dance in New York. I mentioned that at the beginning of the show, but I got really interested in tap, and I had the pleasure of studying under him, and also a lady by the name of Ayodele Cassell. And there was a whole wave of tap dance in New York City at the time, and it changed everything. He changed everything. It was no longer really about arm movements or any sort of facial projection at all. It was absolutely purely about the sounds that you were making. And we would improvise in class, so we would trade off counts of eight and improvise and create rhythms and create a dialogue exactly like musicians would do. And he had a seminal, he's been in several Broadway shows, but he was in one called Bring in the Noise, Bring in the Funk, and that just changed everything. I have recently discovered that he's created a new company and Ayodele's in it, and they're coming to London in April, I believe. I hope it's the whole company. I've been emailing with her while I'm making this project, and she's unsure if the whole company's coming, but he definitely is, and I highly recommend it. He's going to be at Sadler's Wells this April in London. I had a hard time editing that clip. I mean, in total, it's about 14 minutes, but it's compelling. I mean, he's doing that just with his feet. Like, what? So staying in the same vein slightly, I'm now going to talk about an amazing lady. Her name is Thekla Schiphorst, and she is a media artist and designer. She's also a former dancer, and she helped create the first sensor system that helped map choreography. So she worked with Merce Cunningham Company. I think she's an amazing lady. We were going to do an interview yesterday, but it didn't happen. We've been emailing. She is a professor at Simon Fraser University and lives in Vancouver. Here is a short clip of an interview she did for Body Data Space. Thekla Schiphorst.
I've always been really interested in sensory technologies, even before they existed. And one of the reasons is I have a background in both dance and performance. So I like to move and I like to create, but I also have a background in computer science, so that I like to program and design and think about what future technologies might be. When I started doing this, though, there were no such things as interactive performances. Okay, I'm maybe not that old, but still technology has grown so much in the last 5 and 10 years. What's possible now and what's going to be possible 10 years from now is exploding in front of us. So, for example, I when I was younger than I am now, maybe even as young as you, I actually worked with choreographers like Merce Cunningham to design choreographic software that people could actually use to design movement in a computer. These are the kinds of things that are very, very common these days and don't even seem like anything special. But to come up with these ideas and then even have them accepted in a world that thought that was crazy. People were afraid of things like, oh no, if you use the computer, it means nobody will dance anymore. Actually, it actually helped people dance more. And it began to allow us to explore things like two people dancing in different locations, ideas of telepresence, ideas of dancing actually with things like robots in a space. Because technology is so pervasive, we can imagine times when what we wear actually will talk to us, may make suggestions, may make us either healthier or actually excite us, so that these kinds of ways in which we move in the world or actually communicate with others. One of the things that I've said is that telepathy is the ultimate wireless network. What if our technology allows us or helps us to think with others, or even maybe to hear what others are thinking and feeling? these things can help us. They can also be kind of scary, and so issues of privacy might come into it. But the design of these kinds of technologies is actually something that's here now. But the really important thing that we need are people that can think into the future, that can think of how we use what's possible now and to create what people haven't thought of yet. Because this is where actually the new area of design with technology is so, so, so important. What's even more important is the idea that we can engineer or re-engineer in a way ourselves, our lives, and how we integrate and connect with people. So the kinds of skills that you probably have already, which is a desire to make something, a desire to make the world more engaged, for example, is a part of it. So these places of technology are really blending two kinds of skills, our inner intuitive sensing skills and our pragmatic making doing skills. Sensory technologies are really creative, but one of the other really important aspects of them is they have a great potency. They are able to actually change our own ethical relationship to ourselves and others, and actually have social change and health and well-being as an aspect of what they do, and as an aspect of what they're capable of. If we think of our senses as actually how we connect and understand the world, if we're actually designing with sensory technologies, we can actually shift how we understand social structures, cultural structures, political structures, and our own structures, like friendships, for example, and family. So this area of work is both DIY, but it's not only DIY with needle and thread and a soldering iron, it's also DIY with the world we live in. I was really drawn into exploring sensory technologies, even though nobody was doing it at the time, but even though that was serious for me, working with materials and working with creating also has a really playful aspect. It's fun, it's pleasurable, and there are many challenges, but when you have something that you can live and breathe in and it gives you joy, it actually makes it easier to deal with those challenges. And one of those challenges is, of course, how we're going to change the world we live in the future.
That was Tekla Shiphorse talking about her work in new media and with dance companies, and in particular the technology she helped invent called Body Forms, which was used in collaboration with Merce Cunningham. I'm going to play a short clip now from a Cunningham interview, and it's from a short film shot by Howard Silver, and the interview in particular is shot by Scott Sinkler. And Cunningham is talking about his work Oceans, and it was the last... The music for it was the last composition that John Cage produced for him before he passed away. It was incomplete, though, so David Tudor finished it, and he overlaid his own sounds on top of the Cage score. So this is an interesting intersection here between Tekla Shiphorse's Body Forms technology, Cunningham dance choreography, Cage's score, and David Tudor's sounds as well. I'm also going to read a little bit of David Tudor's notes from his soundings Ocean Diary that he wrote during the making of this piece. He says, "Each performer uses different sound materials derived from peripheral ocean sources, sea mammals, Arctic ice, fish telemetry, and sonar, ship noises. The sounds are preconditioned by a group of input modifiers and then acoustically presented by a group of output modifiers, which substantially alter their characteristics. The choice of electronic components affecting these alterations can differ with each performance. The sound system employs a sophisticated electronic panning process, distributing the sounds among three systems, two clusters of four speakers, each which are movable, hanging from the ceiling at either side of the space, and an encompassing group of four additional channels. Thus, three different architectural spaces are defined." So here is a short clip of a Merce Cunningham interview, followed by the John Cage track In a Landscape, which was featured on the Ocean of Sound compilation that accompanied David Toop's book, Ocean of Sound. So here's Merce Cunningham, followed by In a Landscape by John Cage.
It was John Cage who had this idea about something in the round. And then John died, and so we thought the project would have to be given up. When it came my part, I marked a circle out, roughly 40 feet, and stopped suddenly. I thought, well, where's front? What's front? And so I divided the whole area into 12 sections and using chance operations to tell me, well, now you go here, now you'll go over here. For the dance, I remember two of them were, I was trying to get them to circle more. And I said, bend over more. When you're coming around, it was like curving in space rather than thinking in straight lines. We did it, and our first performance in Brussels, I didn't really think it was a circus ring till we got there. It occurred to me that if they have horses going, it would have to be that much circumference so that they could gallop. Anyway, that was the way we started. There are these 150 musicians, but there's no conductor. And the sound comes from a center arrangement down and then out. In other words, the Cage sound is this way, and David Tudor's sound comes that way. You can see something, you can change it. With the dancers, you have to give them a rest. And the computer, doesn't matter how many times you do it, it doesn't get tired. You have two things in time, the dance and the music, both of which occupy the 90 minutes, but they occupy it each in a different way. So there is no direct connection between what you hear and the way you see what's going on. The sound is like being in a bath of sound, because it comes from every source around you. In doing it, you find out something about dance, something that you'd never thought of before. I always look forward to seeing what that will be in this circumstance.
Thank you.
You're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM. My name is Leslie Deer, and this show is a response to this year's Urban Encounters Festival at Tate Britain. We're exploring just a collection of artists and sounds and people that I find interesting, particularly inspired by Brandon LaBelle's text, The Sonic Body. So again, this is specifically commissioned by the Modern Language Experiment in collaboration with the Urban Encounters Festival at Tate Britain. The festival is organized by Paul Halliday, which is, he's an urban photography tutor at Goldsmiths. So he's been there since the beginning of this festival, and it's his baby, basically. And here's Paul Halliday talking about Urban Encounters at Tate Britain.
Peter Fraser earlier today in the conference was talking about sound. He was talking about experiencing the unexpected, and that often he'll go into a space and he'll hear things, and that will point to something that has a visual presence as well. And I think that's what a lot of photographic artists understand, that there's a relationship often between sound, sometimes even between sensation, sometimes smell, other kind of senses, and what you land up seeing and what you land up becoming interested in enough to want to photograph it. I mean, interestingly, my background for many, many years when I was young, I had a scholarship as a singer. So I had many, many years of training in music, to the point I was actually thinking of doing a music degree. I didn't. I got involved in photography and social sciences, you know, law and archaeology and anthropology and these things. So actually, I would argue that my training in music is absolutely central to how I visualise things. And Cartier-Bresson, who was a photojournalist, talks about that. He spoke about it. He wrote about it very eloquently. And he spoke about the impact that fugues and Bach, Baroque music in particular, had on him. And that when he looked at the urban landscape, he almost heard music in the formulation of the landscape. So it's something that many photographers, if they come from a multidisciplinary arts background, understand. They tend not to compartmentalise and box things off, and they tend to think in terms of fluidity, in terms of movement, in terms of contact, in terms of planes, surface materiality, and sound is part of that. It's part of that matrix.
Do you photograph dancers? Do you work with dancers?
Well, oddly enough, I have done, actually. I was commissioned by the Greenwich Dance Agency some years ago to do a project. I mean, it was, I remember how many years ago? It must be 10, 12 years ago. And it was great. And what we did, there was a choreographer and a dancer, and they wanted someone that was an urban photographer to work with the dancer in urban space. So we went into urban spaces around London. We looked at how people were moving in those spaces, and then I did a series of photographs which were then used as part of the dance performance. I loved it. I had a great time doing it. It's great fun. And I got a bit busy after that, so I was doing quite a few other things and other commissions, and then I'm setting up an MA. So I didn't go back to it, but it's something I'd actually like to do more of, which is you know, thinking about how people occupy space, how they move through space. And then to maybe make a kind of visual narrative of some sort, some form from it.
Yeah, because it becomes quite sculptural, I would think, like with
totally.
Yeah, with buildings, objects, and in the human form. Like, how many years have you been doing this festival?
This is now the fifth year. Okay. The first year was at Goldsmiths, and then it's run at Tate for another 4 years.
Okay.
What happens is we sit down immediately after the conference, and we have another conversation about what might be good for next year. For next year, we've already started planning, though. In fact, we're actually planning for 2 years in advance now, because
okay.
It's quite a big event now, and it's it draws quite a large audience. So we have to plan it quite carefully. And we try to... We have regular people that come in, so we have regular academics either chair or they're involved in some way, and we have artists that sort of come in as well and do different things. But we also try to sort of rotate people. So the plan is that we have a sort of a 3 to 5 year rotational cycle, which works quite well with artists because they're often working on different projects. So, and also they seem to really respond to, you know, having academics and having people that they wouldn't necessarily be meeting in their own departments or their own studios or whatever. So that's been really, really good. So we have a number of artists that just keep insisting on coming back, and they just insinuate themselves and demand to be on the guest list, and they're out, some of them are out there now. And it's great for us because it means that you see them having that conversation. It means it's feeding into their practices. And it means that people that are in, you know, sociology and anthropology and geography and archaeology in these areas get the chance to have some sort of meaningful conversation with people that are makers.
Right, yeah, so you're creating a dialogue, like, yeah, with this tool.
That was it. I mean, that was absolutely, it's dialogue. But the whole philosophy really was, it was about not just, you know, the encounter with urban space, urban, you know, city spaces, but also thinking about methodological encounters, interdisciplinary encounters as well, encounters with ideas and concepts, and sort of creating a space which was productive. Because often when you when you create a you're involved in sort of facilitating an interdisciplinary space, you sometimes get, you know, different ideas of how academia or how the world of art should be rubbing up against each other quite uncomfortably. And we seem, with this conference, we seem to have brought it to the point where people understand that there's this kind of common area called urbanism, and in our case, visual urbanism. And it's a great space for people to be having those discussions and those debates and contacts as well. And we know it works because we know that there are people that have come to this event, and they've continued their networks and they've continued to have those. I mean, it was actually quite strange to me today watching the presentation in the last panel, because one of the speakers, Isaac, I don't think he realised that two of the people that he was showing were my two former students. And it was great to sort of see that work up there, and it's really good work, and it's been very widely published. But he was talking about the richness of the visuals and also the sort of, you know, the sort of urban theory context as well. And you know, to see that is just phenomenal. Actually, it's just an amazing.
Yeah, because it's coming full circle. Then
absolutely,
isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
absolutely
amazing. Yeah. Paul, congratulations. So up next, I'm going to play the sound piece of what originally was a multi-channel sound and video installation. It's by a young artist called Charlotte Norwood. She graduated from Goldsmiths in 2010 with a BA in Fine Art and Critical Studies. I met her because we both exhibited in the Resonance Open at the Gone with the Wind show at Raven Row, curated by Resonance. We've become friends since and go out often to hear music together. I have found a kindred spirit in that regard. So this piece is called Or Degrees, parentheses, The Grafter. And it's a 4-7 part video installation, depending on the space that it's shown in. The sound that you're going to hear is actually Morse code. So in each video, there's a character and they have an oar, a boat oar, and they are tapping out the following sentence in Morse code. Without enough constraints to make possible, things will always only be what you understand in that time to be. We're coming to the end of the show, and I'm going to play a couple more things. I'm now going to kind of veer off into club land in honor of LaBelle's notion of the triangulation of sound, body, and space, and the sonic texturing of the air and the spaces where we hear sound, the places that we go to listen. And when I reread this text, it made me think of going out, of warehouse parties or listening to DJs. So I was doing that this past Sunday in Hackney Wick. I went to a night called Voxish. It was at the Glass Factory in Hackney Wick. And I saw a really interesting performance by Joe Howe and Julia Scott. And I've gotten in touch with him and we've been emailing, and he sent me a track to play and also some information about this project. The reason it caught my attention was there was live feed during the performance that the singer was interacting with. So it really included the audience at that point because, it was in grayscale. It didn't have details, but it was obviously us. It was obviously the crowd as part of the performance. And it was really interesting. And I thought it would be interesting to talk about his work on this show. He sent me some notes, which I'll just read. He says that he's interested in the ideas of cyborg theory, that of extending human ability using technology, and also the ideas of embodied art, the notion that a creator is always present in the work, despite their possible physical presence being missing. So I'm going to play an audio file that he sent me. The project is called Just in Time by Lake, and it's a new performance project combining text, sound, and movement. And it's a collaboration between Joe Howe, Annabelle Frierson, and Julia Scott. Check him out. He's got a couple interesting interviews online that I've seen as well. So here is Joe Howe's Just in Time by Lake.
Mass is named after the late massacred mad group and can be considered a descend on of music. Although its grave thick all nature disc eyes is that fact. As with most music languages, man's enemy edge it her distinguish between two level of time that of an event scared you will her and that of the D is peace this correspondence to the distinction between decay rate and air eight process is in C sound and consecrate averse us audible hate in soup her cold hide her the be sick language of man and its resembling prologue is that of day to flow systems man's proud grown all dispatched his are made by arranging and poor neck in building clock of object within a picture or visible canvas. These objects act as self-contained proud groans in reality. They are die name he call he linked libraries each of which may receive input through one or more voice you all in let generation output through voice you all outlet or both object pass me say she's from their outlet to the inlet of can neck tied object mad support six e sick a tone make they do type that can be transmit head Thomas ages from object to object in it float list simple band and signal for m is peace order low connection a number of more complex day to structure exist within the pure ground for hand in new merit a raise table day stars Nash table cold day stars and exempt hellish information tattered day stars and m is peace day to structure before can hold rejected all audible information within prolonged memory in additional the edge it her passage added a sail bubble mole time die mention all day to structure for hand in large sunset of numerous for story in board he oh and other day to set may trickle day stars Magnus is torpor call learned through acquiring an irrevocably of objects and how they function within a snatch her. For example a met row object function a simple me try no me and the ran dome object joy no hate is ran dome cottages Most objects are
non-ray
call
consist
in
only
of an objects
ray
and
an
or
of arguments
attributed
in
is
sense
classes
properties
type
into
an
object
books.
Other
objects
are
grade
I
call
including
slide
does
none
or
books
these
dialect
mutable
head
it
ors
all
down
men
yours
but
on
and
other
object
for
wrong
in
the
ogre
am
interval
active
he
mantle
he sledge
it
her
come
with
about
600 of
these
objects
as
the
saint
and
heard
at
age
extent
some
to
be
pride
am
can
be
written
by
the
heard
party
developed
as
mad
past
us
for
example
by
in
capitulated
in
some
of
the
bond
shone
all
it
key
of
a
snatch
care
into
a
sublime
prognosticate
that
is
itself
a
mad
batch
or
as
object
written
in
c
c
us
Genevan
or
superscription.
Execution
for
met
ages
traverse
in
through
the
geography
of
objects
is
defined
by
the
views
you
will
organization
of
the
objects
in
the
pay
church
itself
as
a
result
of
this
or
gain
ice
in
principle
match
is
none
usual
in
that
the
panegyric
and
the
into as
presented
to
the
use
per
are
tyrannical
he,
related
although
new
her
aversion
of
Magnus
the ride
and
under
of
take
knowledge
is
for
more
sent
and
heard
joy
you
I
design. Large
none
here
of
people
use
my
accent
even
if
they
are
not
aware
of
it.
Master
moments
call
snatch
her
can
be
burned
all
into
stand
alone
application
and
distributed
free
or
soul
command
heat in
additional
my
access
can
be
diffused
to
author
or
dear
o
plunge
in
software
for
made
your
or
dear
o
production systems
with
the
increased
into
gray
shone
on
lapse
stop
pursuit
his
into
live
musical
form
once
in
electricity
music
and
elsewhere majesty
and majestic
it
her
have
received quite
bitter attention
as
a
devil
up
men
virons avail
able
to
go
serious
about
mountain
top
new
dick
void
of form
once.
You're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM. We have come to the end of the show. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you to the Modern Language Experiment for asking me to do this, and the Urban Encounters Festival at Tate Britain. It's been fun going over this Brandon LaBelle text again, The Sonic Body, and his notion of a body environment, and that dancing is noise in motion, and events that are generated from listening, which is what I'll be doing tomorrow at the Warehouse Project in Manchester. So I thought we would end the show with a track by Shelley Parker. It's her track Drill, which was just released on the 14th of August on the Wire magazine compilation Below the Radar. She's an interesting artist. She explores the experiential potential of sound and image through the manipulation of technology and the study of structure and material, and she uses live audio feeds, bass frequencies, and found sounds. Thanks very much for listening. This is Drill by Shelley Parker.